You're listening to the Anfield Wrap. My name's Adam Smith, and this is what football means to me. In this episode, I speak with Gareth Roberts. Gareth was one of the founding members of the Anfield Wrap and has been an integral part of making the organisation what it is today. For someone who I think most of us will think of as being a really passionate football supporter, it's interesting to hear that things could have been very different for him if he'd followed in his family footsteps and not really liked football at all.
I would say that I had a fairly untypical bringing up in or upbringing in terms of that no one in our house is into football or was into football. So, you know, I didn't like get it from my dad or my mum. It was very much a thing I picked up from people I knew. I'm from, you know, from as soon as I knew people, I can remember kicking balls with people, if you know what I mean. Like, you know, I went to nursery before I went to school, and, you know, play out in the roads and things like that. And it always would involve a ball. Do you know what I mean? I just always remember that. Like, when I was walking down to record this, then I was thinking about a lad who lived on our road who used to knock around with when I was a kid. And, you know, we played footy like day and night and until we were told to get in, basically. And there was a field at the end of the road as well, so we'd sometimes go there, but to be honest, we mainly played in the street, which I'm sure was really popular with everyone who lived in the street. But he had this thing of saying, anytime you did something that was good, you know, like if you threw in a little cheeky cross turn, or you meg someone, or you scored a nice volley, or whatever it might be, he'd always go, that's a piece of skill that makes up the jigsaw that might mean you make it. That's it. As a kid, like, coming out with that, like, always sticks in my head. But no one made it. But yeah, they were the earliest memories, booting it around in the street. And then in the back garden as well. We only had a little back garden, but I was always out there, and, like, the shed was one goal, and the wall underneath the back window was the other goal, and she used to go between the two, take on the dog and the washing pole, and that was it. So yeah, kicking around in the street in the back garden are the earliest memories of any type of football whatsoever.
So with no familial influence, how come you ended up supporting Liverpool? Was there a particular person that did, or was it something on the telly, or what caused you to go down that path?
Just everyone I hung around with, I think, was a Reds pretty much, and all the early influences in terms of friends and things like that were Reds. I was conscious of them being on the telly, of them being good. I knew one of my cousins went with his dad. So there was people around me that went to the game. Like, my next door neighbour, a fella from Dublin, Paddy, he used to go to Goodison one weekend and Anfield the next. I quite like that, looking back now, because you just would not get that now, would you, whatsoever. No. But I like the idea that, like, you just liked football, and that was sound, and in his head, that was sound. And I've actually heard old school scousers say that was a thing once upon a time. Definitely isn't now, obviously. But so I was aware that people went, and I was always dead interested in it. And, like, you know, if you walked up the road from where I lived, like 5 minutes, you were on, like, a bit of a hill. Like, the Bluebell Estate is on a hill in Highton, and you can see, like, town, and you can see when, like, Liverpool or Everton are home, you can see the lights basically from the ground. And so, and I was always, like, fascinated by that. It always seemed like this, like, mystical place that I wanted to get involved with. And, you know, like, footy wasn't all over the telly like it is now. Then, you know, it was match of the day, it was the big match, one live game a week, really, on the Sunday. But I started religiously watching them. I can remember watching Heysel, that sticks in my head, on a black and white portable in the back room, because I was never allowed to watch it on the big telly, because, like I say, no one was interested. Yeah, so my mum and dad didn't want to give up the big telly in the living room for me to watch football, so I had to go in the back room and watch it on my own. But, you know, I was into it. Like, I remember religiously buying the footy magazines and having the league ladder. For older arses out there who remember that, which was, you know, you moved the teams up and down on this little ladder, basically, to show where they were in the league. So, you know, you would be able to do that after every single game played, and I did do. Used to religiously, obviously a bit older, read the Pink Echo from cover to cover.
Yeah.
And I was always into footy. Like, I mean, loved Liverpool from an early age. Remember getting my first kit and things like that, and was absolutely, you know, delighted. But I also always remember just being into footy. Do you know what I mean? So, like, I've probably gone full circle now where, like, I'm more Liverpool-centric again now. But there was a time where I was, like, interested in all the local footy. And, you know, for a long time, I used to go and watch Tranmere on a Friday and go and watch loads of non-league. And but I was interested in all of it because I was reading it in the Pink.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And there was nothing else. There was no internet to start tapping into or anything like that. So you got your stuff on the radio, you know, which was good, by the way. You know, local radio used to be brilliant for footy. You had the Pink, and then you had a little bit on the telly, and then magazines like Match and Shoot and things like that. But my mum and dad were like always reluctant with me around football all the way through. Like, I can remember having to proper moan and almost fight for that first Liverpool kit because they weren't into it, so they didn't get it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and they were like, well, you know, and I had all these posters all over my wall of, you know, Rushy and Barnes and Dalglish and things like that. And They just didn't get it. They associated it with hooligans, rightly or wrongly.
Mm.
So they never wanted me to go or to get involved. And like I said, they weren't into it at all. So, you know, later on, like a bit older, I'd be mithering my dad to take me. Just never did. Never watched a game of football with my dad in my life.
Really?
Now never will. But even when there was like a non-league team that was Kirby Town. They changed the name to Knowsley United and they moved to Highton and they started playing on the old rugby pitch, which is right by my mum and dad's. So there's literally like a footy club, you know, a stone's throw. Like you could see them out the bedroom window. And so I started going to watch them and I used to say to my dad, like, just walk over with me and watch it. Like, no interest whatsoever. I think he'd been to one game in his life with some mates when he was, you know, young. And his only recollection of it was that George Best was playing. So I presume it was against United.
Yeah.
And his one recollection is a fucking United player. Yeah, well in that. I just never had that off them. And in fact, what happened instead was I was always mithering other people then. You know, like there was a lad who was younger than with in juniors, Jimmy, and him and his dad went to match and used to take a lad out of their road, Manuel. And Mama wasn't that into the footy, really. He was into it, but not, like, religiously into it. And I used to sort of try and get this message across saying, I'm well into it more, you know, team me.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, he lives in the road, though, and we know his ma and all this. God bless us all, Manuel's not with us now either. It was a real battle to go. And, like, you know, the cousin who I mentioned, he didn't live locally, so, you know, couldn't gag him with them either. And in fact, you know, in the end, I went without them knowing, do you know what I mean? I was just like, right, I'm just going.
So what was it? What was the first match, do you remember?
Yeah, Crewe Alexandra in the Rumbelows Cup.
Right.
It was about 17,000 there, night game, 1-5-1. Rob Jones playing for the opposition. and it was fantastic, you know. A fairly cliched answer here, I would say, but you know, because I hear a lot of people say it, but you know, all the sights and the sounds and, you know, just smells even were just overwhelming. And it was, you know, it was great to go. You know, I was a teenager by this point, and all of this time I'd been like desperate to go to a game of footy, or desperate to go to Anfield, more to the point. And you know, here I was finally there, night game, under the lights. You know, Barnes, he's there, McMahon's there, Beardsley's there, Rush is there. And it was just like, wow, do you know what I mean? And it was like, and McMahon scores a great goal in that game, if I remember correctly. I think Barnes actually had a penalty saved by Dean Grey Goose. fantastic name. But yeah, not a sellout or anything like that. You could just walk up and get in, do you know what I mean? But it was great, and I had the bug then straight away, and I was like, right, I'm going. And like there was a few lads in my class at school who went, and I just sort of gagged in with them. And eventually, after I'd been to an handful of games, I told my mum and dad, but I just said, and they weren't happy. They was, you know, still trotting out this shit about hooligans and what have you. And I was like, there's no trouble, it's fine. And I said, we're getting a lift down there off a lad called Argreaves. His ma used to give us a lift. So, you know, I sold it to them that, you know, I wasn't just making my own way, although sometimes we didn't get a lift, so I was getting buses and stuff, but I didn't. And in the end, my dad gave us a lift a couple of times and things like that, but that was about as far as it went. Like, I remember a really torturous occasion where, he wanted something on a Saturday from like Taskers, which is obviously quite near the ground.
Yeah.
And I went with him. And, you know, all these people are walking up to the game and you can hear announcements in the ground and floodlights are on and, all, you know, full it. And I'm like, so close, you bastard. But, you know, never did go with him. But went with mates from school and went from there. And we had a mad, like, sort of little thing, you know, like, so you had to go early then if you wanted a good spec because we were going on the cop. So we'd leave Heighton sort of 12-ish, head up. And we used to call in on one of our mates' granddads who lived in Anfield, and it was like this thing of like, yeah, you know, you'd just about be safe on the brew, but don't have any of the food. Do you know what I mean? Like the food was always way out of date. Like these, it was this. I'm sure it was the same scones that came out every time on a plate, rock hard, and you're like, yeah, don't go near the scones. But no, we'd be in early, to get a spec to make sure we were in. And we had all kinds of, and I'm sure loads of people were the same, had all kinds of like routines, you know, like that you'd see the opposition come out in the suits, you know, and have a look at the pitch and all that and give them a good boo. And then when all our boys come out and started training, like every single player had a song. Mm. So you'd trot all those songs out and you'd get a wave back off them. And you know, even though it was standing the cop then, you know, everyone had specs, so, you know, like now when you go to the game and you see faces and you talk to these people that you only know through the match, you know, you had that then as well, because people would gravitate to the same spec. So yeah, fantastic from day one. Absolutely loved it and fell in love with it and tried to go as much as I possibly could from there on in.
You worked as a journalist, is that right? So yeah. Was football an influence behind that, or was that coincidental?
No, 100%. It was an influence. So when I was in school, Bowden Comprehensive in Heighton, first couple of years, I think it's fair to say, I fucked about. And, you know, I was seen as not a troublemaker, but someone who wasn't applying himself, shall we say. And, you know, like my parents were up to the school a couple of times and things like that. And there was talk of being suspended at one point, but I managed to swerve out of it. But I remember, like, you know, there was all these teachers saying to me that I had potential, and they were saying this to my mum and dad and all this kind of gear. And I remember, like, having this bit of a sit down where they were deciding, should they suspend me or not? And they were like, what is it, you know, what is it you want to do? And I didn't really know, and I was just like, oh, we had a solicitor. And I like, you know, but it did start to make me think at that point, what is it I do want to do? And it definitely wasn't fucking solicitor. And so I started to think about it. And I remember there being a project in English where, you know, you could produce some kind of, you know, journalism or some kind of project. And it was up to you sort of what it was. And I actually made a fanzine. I've still got it. And I called it Any Spares, as in Any Spare Tickets.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, wrote a few articles and things like that. Some really poor illustrations in there because, you know, that's never been my forte. But yeah, that was when I was in school. So the idea of doing something fanzine-y was sort of in my head at that point. And I always, you know, once I started going, I always bought like Through the Wind and the Rain. I would even buy, you know, some of the Blue Nose ones as well, like When Skies Are Grey and things like that. Just to see what was going on in their world. And I was always fascinated by it because, you know, obviously I read the papers and things like that, saw the mainstream coverage, but fan coverage was always different and always off to the left, and I always liked it. And, you know, it was one of those things where it was a good way to learn about the culture that's around the game.
Yeah.
And you know, and loads of stuff in, like I remember loads of stuff about Hillsborough and stuff like that. In Through the Wind and the Rain. And I knew about Hillsborough, and there was people in my class at school who went and things like that. You know, I wasn't oblivious to that by any means, quite the opposite. But you know, you learnt more, you learnt about campaign, and you learnt about things that were going on in the city through reading the likes of Through the Wind and the Rain. So it helped you sort of get clued up. And I always fancied it, but I didn't quite have the bottle at that point to rattle something off and send it in. And yet the journalism thing, I was leaving school, I was pretty set on, I wanted to be some kind of writer, preferably around footy eventually. Did my A-levels and then did a degree in journalism and tried to make as much of that sport focused as I could. but it didn't really work in that I fell into a news job straight out of uni. But even then, like every news job I had, I was always trying to do sport or sport stories. And, you know, and I remember like the sports editor, because I was on this paper in Ellesmere Port, it was my first job. And the sports editor was off 1 week. I was like, get in, you know what I mean? And like, you know, it just meant that I covered like Vauxhall Motors and things that. Like nothing wow. But like I volunteered to start doing some stuff on Tranmere and things like that. So went watching them off my own bat and getting some little bits and bobs around Tranmere. And then, I just kept working my way around news jobs at first. Then I got a job in weekly sport on the Echo. So, you know, doing all like Crosby Herald, Southport Visitor, Formby Times, all of those type of papers that are around and about. And as part of that job, I got to cover Marine.
Right.
So that was good. I enjoyed that, to be fair. And then I went to the Daily Sport, working on their sports desk. And at that point, managed to start blagging into like Liverpool's press box every now and again, and started writing, or launched Well Read fanzine. And then we're getting up to the point where I'm meeting Andy and we're having a chat about the Anfield app then.
Yeah. So talk me through that then. Talk me, was that always, obviously when you were initially talking about it, I guess you could have only dreamt that it had become what it's become in the, you know, sort of behemoth of sport, you know, fan-led sports coverage. But in terms of, did you see that as a bit of a way out of the job, or was it a kind of, it'd just be a nice thing to do to fill your time with?
No, I don't, at that point, wasn't really ever thinking about it growing to what it is, if I'm being perfectly honest. Like, when I launched Well Read, it was largely, people won't be that surprised to hear this word and me, but a lot of it was out of anger almost that, you know, that Hicks and Gillette were doing what they were doing to the club, and yet the likes of the Echo and mainstream media and stuff were largely quiet on it. Do you know what I mean? And okay, there were certain reporters who did do stuff and, you know, helped to bring attention to what was going on, but a lot of the conversation and a lot of the wider stuff was being had among fans, but then wasn't ended up anywhere beyond, you know, like forums, message boards, early days of Twitter and things like that. So that was what sort of prompted me into first writing a blog called Well Read, and then latterly turning that into a magazine. And, you know, when it was the magazine, it was hard graph doing it on top of a day job. But I was quite proud of what came out the other side of it. But it was actually the blog rather than the magazine when Andy and Tony Evans, Jim as well, back in the day, you know, got talking to the likes of those people through writing the blog. And, you know, Andy suggested we go for a pint because he knew bits and bobs about what were going on and things like that. And then just when we were talking one time, we both started talking about podcasts, and it sort of grew from there. I mean, I think we both thought at the time that there was definitely a gap there for something, something different. There wasn't many podcasts around then, certainly not around Liverpool. There was one in like Australia maybe, or America or something, if I remember rightly, and it was quite good. But we were like, you know, we want to do one in Liverpool, lads we know, we go to the game, we want it to be, you know, recorded in the city in a professional environment, all of that kind of stuff. And we went from there, and then just, you know, obviously there was an accompanying website, which again we put a lot of effort into. Ian Maloney designed it, and, you know, all the logos and stuff that you still see to this day were down to Ian, and the early website was down to Ian as well. And we made sure that was sort of loaded up from day one. Do you know what I mean? Put a lot of effort into it. It wasn't just like a holding page. It was like, boom, here's a load of articles from loads of people that you likely heard of, so at least some of them, and off we go. And your podcast got great feedback from day one. It wasn't too much longer afterwards that we were offered the radio show, and then on it went from there. I mean not everything's you know, being a bed of roses with it all. Like, we've done things that haven't worked out. You know, the digital magazine, for those that remember that, you know, we were really proud of how that looked and felt and what we produced, and it was something a bit different and all the rest of it. But ultimately it didn't work out, and we didn't get loads of advertising in like we hoped we would, and it didn't sort of pay for itself like we hoped it would. And so, you know, that had to go down as ultimately something that didn't work out and something that we stopped. Similarly, later on in a row, we tried launching the 50-50 podcast, if people remember that.
Yeah.
Which was more of a mainstream chat about footy rather than just being about Liverpool. Again, we didn't quite nail that one either. So, you know, I think people always say, oh, you know, Everton just touched 30 to go. But there are a few things that didn't work out, like, it's fair to say.
When you, I guess, going back a little bit to when you first started doing the journalism side of things, but then also you can answer kind of all the way through, I guess, to when you launched the Anfield Wrap and you started doing the podcasts. Did you find that how you viewed football changed at any point? Or do you think it was, because it's a tricky one, I guess, because you were always into football, which is why you wanted to do the journalism. But did doing the journalism change how you viewed the football?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah, because, you know, I was always chasing. I always wanted, like, you know, when James Pearce and Barrett and Dom King and people like that, even Basco before all of them as well, you know, when they were like Liverpool reporter at the Echo, like, that was the job I wanted. And, you know, I went for that and didn't get it, and was pissed off that I didn't get it. And, you know, the jobs I ended up doing in sport were largely sub-editor jobs. So, you know, writing the headlines, subbing the copy, writing the caption, you know, all of that kind of gear. And look, you know, I'll argue with you all day that that's a skill in itself, because it is. And there should be more of those type of people around, judging by the standards of some of the journalism we see these days. But anyway, but I mean, yeah, doing it, and certainly once you start, like, interview, like, I always remember, like, a best keeper's name out just in case, but, you know, there was a, let's just say there's a national newspaper journalist who said to me, who, you know, who does report on football, I'm trying to keep it all nice and general, but he said to me, like, once you pull the curtain back, like, it's not the same. And he said, and there is something in the phrase of, you know, never meet your heroes and things like that. And he said, you know, if you're doing it on the regular, like, and you're doing match after match after match, and you're trying to grab players and all that, he said, you'll end up thinking loads of them are bellends. And he said, and it'll taint how you feel about a lot of it. And I've had bits of that, no two ways about it. Like, I would say, you know, how I feel about it now is vastly different to how I felt about it when I was a kid. You know, I was starry-eyed about football then. And, you know, like, I can remember meeting John Barnes when I was a kid. He was signing Diodora posters in a sports shop on Bold Street that no longer exists. And when I met him, I was literally speechless. I was like, this is John fucking Barnes, do you know what I mean? And, like, he's asking me my name, you know, like, he wants to put, like, two what my name is. And I'm just, like, looking at him going, like, John fucking Barnes. Eventually got my name out, and I've still got that poster somewhere, I think. But, you know, like, now, obviously, you know, 46 this year, like, and, you know, I'm not phased by meeting a footballer. Like, I've met plenty of them now, and they're just people. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So you lose some of that innocence and stuff. And yeah, you know, doing the report and side of it, and the sub editing side of it, and all that, you hear plenty of that sort of taints how you view the game. And, you know, certainly some of the agent stuff, and, you know, how some people make money out of the game. You're like, not really into that. And I think that's why, still, you know, I mentioned before how I like, or did like, you know, a lot of the other football that went on sometimes. Sort of finding myself leaning to a little bit that way again now. So, you know, fairly recently I went and watched Prescott Cables, and I haven't been for ages. And I really enjoyed it. And like, the game was shite, to be honest with you. It wasn't a classic game by any stretch, but it was more the experience of it, the fact that it felt very community-led, and, well, it is community-led, and, you know, the pint, the pie, the shouts that you hear. And at Cables now, they've got this fella who, you know, who reads out the teams and tells you who scored and all that, and he's an American fella, and he's fucking great. Like, I hadn't experienced this fella before, and then he's reading the thing out, and he gives it absolute beans. Like, you know, it's like he's like at ice hockey, basketball, wrestling, boxing, whatever, you know what I mean, gives it the full thing. But it's funny, and it's good, and it's different, and it's very, you know, very, very non-league in that, you know, non-league does definitely attract some characters. So, but yeah, it does change your view on it. And look, like I say, I'm up and down about football now. I still have time, don't get me wrong, where I absolutely love it, and it lifts me off my feet, and it takes me to great places and all the rest of it. But there's plenty that I see and hear and read and all the rest of it, and I go, that does me out in a bit, that, do you know what I mean? And all
and
that.
Is that stuff that you maybe wouldn't see and hear if you weren't doing what you're doing?
Maybe, yeah, because, you know, I look at some of my peers, if you like, who've never done the stuff I've done, and some of them still seem quite, or more romantic about it than I am, I would say, and still sort of look at it and discuss it in a more, what's a nice way to say? The not nice way to say is naive, but there's something to be said for being naive about it, almost, do you know what I mean? Like, if you can just enjoy it and not be too worried about what's going on in the background and all the grimmer side of it, then that's potentially a good thing, because it's supposed to be your escape, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's supposed to be the thing that lifts you up, that takes you away from everyday life, that puts colour in the grey and all the rest of it. But if you end up not liking, you know, lots of the game as well, then, you know, you're killing your little golden goose a bit, aren't you?
Do you find that it's less of an escape for you now because it's so all-consuming in terms of, you know, what you do with the Anfield rap is so football, Liverpool, all the time? Does it make it less of an escape?
Yeah, I think it has for me, certainly last few years. But I mean, I would guess some of that is down to, I knew it'd end up turning into a therapy session this week. but, you know, a lot of that, I will say, to keep it brief, will be down to some of the circumstances that I've been through in recent years as well. And look, you know, there's still been times where it's still been absolutely brilliant, and I've gone to games and, like, it's done what it's meant to do. But equally, I have found myself at times stood there not feeling that way anymore, do you know what I mean? And just being a bit like, it's sort of happening around me a little bit, and me going, don't feel like I used to about this. But I have ebbs and flows with that now. And like I say, that may be down to wider life. And maybe I rediscover that. I hope I do, to be honest. You know, that's why, like, I've been doing things like going to watch a little bit of non-league and stuff, just seeing other aspects that I still go, that's good. I like that, do you know what I mean? And I think there are, and I think there will be. And look, you know, this season and all the rest of it's brilliant. There are loads of big games to look forward to. I do enjoy games in terms of how it's where I socialise, it's where I see my mates, you know, where I am in life. You're not going out partying all the time and things like that, like you were when you were in your 20s. So it is where I see, you know, me best mates, basically. So, you know, for that reason alone, it's still a huge part of my life. But, you know, it helps, doesn't it, that Liverpool are absolutely fantastic at the moment, and there's all these hopes and dreams about how this season could go. I mean, I genuinely do look at my mate who's literally, I've known him since the start of senior school, and he's like what I am about Liverpool, about Everton, though. And I always think that must be so grim. And, like, when I talk to him, it sounds grim, and when I see him and just how he is about Everton, it is grim. And like, look, he still goes, but, like, he, you know, he seems to, like, go through this real, like, sense of duty and doesn't enjoy it and hates them. Do you know what I mean? And you're like, that's not fun, is it?
No.
So, you know, it definitely helps that we've got a great side, a great club, a great manager and all that kind of stuff. And I do wonder where it'd be if it was in issues.
When you say about the kind of the manner in which maybe what's been going on in your personal life has coloured what's happened, you know, your relationship with football and things, has that made you be able to detach from the football a little bit more? Or has it made the football mean more? Just see what I mean?
Both. There's been times, like I say, where it's worked how it should work in my mind, and that, you know, things have been shit. And then, you know, the footy has been the escape. The footy's been great for me. The footy's been, you know, so we've had a fantastic win, or it's been really enjoyable going to the game, and I've just felt it and I've been lifted up by it. But other aspects of it, you know, and how owners are, some owners anyway, how things sometimes happen in the press and all that. Like, it's just, a lot of it feels like a big cycle that I've seen a million times. And, you know, the media cycle around football, if you've worked in it for a long time, it's very, you know, it replicates itself over and over again, and it can feel like, you know, paint by numbers in terms of what you're reading, in terms of what you might be doing as well. And that was always that's not me having a pop at the Anfield Rap. That's just me saying football media in general, I think, is like that because of the nature of what you're doing and what you're covering. There's only so many, you know, as much as every game of football is random in its own right, there are actually only so many scenarios that unfold.
Yeah.
And lots of the stories around the people end up being similar stories, and people fail for the same reasons, people are successful for similar reasons. And, you know, you can get a bit worn by it, I would say. I don't think it's an uncommon feeling for someone at my time of life. But, you know, I've spoke to other people who have said they felt similar. It might be influenced a little bit by pandemics and things like that as well, where you end up thinking about, you know, wider life and where I'm going and what I'm doing and, you know, family and all of those things. Because, you know, I think when we go back to the, you know, what you're talking about earlier and how I felt about football when I was a kid, it was all consuming in a good way. Like, you know, I loved it. And I loved it in a childlike way. And, like, you know, I've said on here loads of the stories that I'm probably saying here, but, you know, things like, you know, the field that I mentioned at the end of my road, where you had to jump over a wall and jump over a river to get to the field. And everyone fell in at some point. Rite of passage, if you're from Highton, you fell in the alt at some point. But, you know, we would go on there and we would literally, like, commentate as we're playing football. You know, like you'd be Ian Rush, and like you'd put a can in the corner of the goal, and that would be the camera in the 86 Cup final, and you'd try and knock the can over like Rushy knocked the camera over in against Everton, things like that. You know, and you're not going to do that now, are you? And look, I like maybe you recapture some of that if your kids get bang into it. You know, like that's the, you know, you live it through them again or most of your life. But again, like, I mean, get the violins out, but my kids aren't into it. So, and I can't make them be into it. Like, my lad is now just, like, he's just starting to show a little bit of interest. Like, he came to Prescott Cables with me. He's on about, he'd give Liverpool another go. He went when he was very young to Anfield, and then, like, he's not really showing an interest in between. Played a little bit for himself, was doing all right. Then pandemic interrupted. Now he's not arsed. So I don't know, we'll see. I'm sort of at the stage with them too where I'm like, okay, well, if they're into it, they're into it, and if they want to go, I'll take them, but I'm not going to like continually like sell this thing to them, push it. You know, I don't want to be one of them dads. I want them to do what they enjoy. So maybe there's still a time where, you know, we can throw the coats down on the field and I can skim my lad and say, I'm here in Russian, how are you, pass me daughter in the goal or something. But that's not come yet.
Do you think there'll be a time when you back away from football a little bit? Like, you know, can you... Because obviously for you, pretty... You know, the story that you've told here is basically one of you got into football and then football has been there forever and it shaped your life. It shaped the decisions that you made. It shaped getting to literally... where we are now, sat in the Anfield Rap Studios with the branding on the wall and, you know, all that sort of stuff. Can you imagine a world where you kind of go, I still care about Liverpool, but that's all I'm going to do is just watch the match and that'll be it?
Yeah, maybe. It's something I've been thinking about. And like I say, I think it's a time of life thing as well in terms of, you know, the Anfield Rap's been going, what, 11 years, 10, 11 years? Well Read magazine before that, working for the sport, doing stuff, little bits for the Star, shifts for the Star, you know, writing for various different publications and websites and stuff over the years as well. I've got to make a living, which sounds grim and sounds very, you know, what's the word? I don't know. But, you know, so there's that, and this is what I'm known for doing. So, you know, there's a part of me going, well, you know, I can't just throw it all up in the air and walk away because, well, what would I do? Because I don't know.
Yeah.
But then maybe I will. Like, I genuinely don't know. Like, with football, sometimes I do have the thoughts around what you were driving at before, I think, where I do think, well, what if I could just go? You know what I mean? And that there was nothing connected to it anymore. It was just literally like the old days of, I'm just going the game. I don't have to remember it. I don't have to analyse it. I don't have to think about it in any way. I don't have to be processing what I'm going to potentially say or ask or anything like that. Because I've not had that too often in the in the time we've been doing
it. Do you think
this.
You've ever had it? Do you think you've ever, like, did you have it when you were younger? Were you still, even when you were younger, were you watching football and maybe thinking, when I get to school, I'm going to be talking about this? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, you're right, because, you know, there's, I've got exercise books, which I appropriated from school. And, you know, I made, like, little books, keeping all the scores in, like, a World Cup and writing down everyone who scored and, you know, putting the attendances in and all this. So there was always something in me around, like, recording it or writing about it or producing me. You know, it was obviously always there. Like I mentioned, the fanzine early on in school, but I've got those books as well. I've got those books that I made about a few World Cups. I think I was doing them for seasons as well at one stage, and, like, you know, like, putting down it, you'd scored in every game and all this kind of stuff, and, you know, all of that kind of gear. So, yeah, you know, that probably has been something around where I've always been a storyteller around it almost. Because, you know, what I love about football is the stuff I described before. Still, I still like all the sights, the sounds, the noise, the songs, what happens in a game, the drama of a game, the story of a game. You know, like the deep analysis of it and things like that. I'll do it myself sometimes, and I'll get involved in it sometimes. And we obviously talk about stuff like that on the Anfield app, but it's that other stuff that really grabs me. That's what I like. Do you know what I mean? That's the, and sometimes you get that from various. You know, sometimes, like I've took the dog for a walk, and there'll be a game of footy somewhere, and I've just stumbled across it, and I'll end up watching it. And then I'll end up being pulled into it, and I'm listening to what the parents are saying, and I'm looking to see who's a good player, and I'm seeing what the coach is saying, and I'm seeing the emotion, you know what I mean? And I'm, like, watching it in that way, and I enjoy that. I like that. I like what, like, sport does to people and how they get involved in it, and I don't know. So maybe there's something around that. I don't know what, I just feel like I'm waffling now, but you know what I mean?
Well, let me ask you this then. In terms of, you said before, obviously, that you know, you're not going to try and force the kids to like something that they don't necessarily enjoy, because, and, you know, absolutely quite right. But if they do start to get into it, do you think that will relight that kind of spark in you watching it through their eyes?
Yeah, I think so, because, you know, like I say, even the other week, taking me eldest lad to Prescott Cables, it was great, because he'd never been there before. I took him to a game between Lidl and Remacher and City of Liverpool a long time back, and he enjoyed that. But his main memory from that was that, you know, some Ketwig lad did a wheelie pretty much the length of the pitch while the game was going on. That was his takeaway from that game. But this one, like, he was taking in the actual game a bit more. He's obviously a bit older now. And, like, he was buzzing off my mate's dad and the shouts that he was coming out with around, like, the referee. And he was moaning about this forward who, you know, was quite decent but was a big lad, like. And, like, you know, my mate's dad was giving it, like, fucking hell, he turns like the Titanic and you're still getting past your boys and all. And, like, you know, Cara's going to me, like, is John's dad really into Prescott Cables, is he? And I'm like, nah, he's never been before. But, you know, like, and then he was just picking up on, like, shouts and, like, you know, he went and got the pies in and, like, and I could see that he enjoyed the day, if not the football. And so that, and I got some joy from seeing that. And so, you know, like, I've been saying to my mate who I sit by, you know, if there's any games you don't fancy, and there's not many of them now, is there, when we're on for a quadruple?
Yeah.
But I was like, you know, I wouldn't mind taking him again and seeing how he gets on at Anfield now. Because, you know, like I say, when I took him the other time, he was a kid, and, you know, all he was really interested in was getting a hot dog and some chocolate, and is it time to go yet, and I need a piss, and, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now he's, like, nearly 14. So he's sort of the age, or nearly the age, when I really got into it, funnily enough. So if he did, or if Bracken did, or if one day little Oliver did, well, you know, great, and I would get involved. I wouldn't be me dad.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. I would go, I'm not fucking going. You know, I'd love to go with one or more of them on the regular. That would be great. And equally, if they got into it themselves, you know, like I say, it was only a brief flirtation for Cara with playing for himself. He's decided now that he's not good enough. Not to anything I've said, by the way. I just keep saying you should keep playing. But he's decided that from his own thoughts and feelings and what have you. But when he did go down and play a few times, I enjoyed that. Mm. Do you know what I mean? And he got man of the match, and he's still got the man of the match award because the team he's played for like disbanded during the pandemic. So he's got that forever at least. Do you know what I mean? Man of the match once for Town Green. So yeah, but yeah, if they get involved, I'll get involved with them.
Two more questions.
Yep.
First one is, has there been a moment with the Anfield rap particularly where it's made you feel a bit like a kid again? Like, you know, because obviously you've done interviews with Klopp and Dalglish and Barnes and all, you know, the current manager and people that you loved growing up. Did you have them, you know, you said before, like, you're not bothered about meeting players anymore and all that, but has there been a moment where you've kind of felt a little bit like, oh, actually, that was exciting?
I think probably the one that sticks out and gets referenced in here, because like they all saw it as well written on my face and how I acted and all the rest of it, was when we had Rushy in here, and like, you know, I was turning up like I hoard or keep loads of like old programs and old, you know, like them special papers that they used to do, like Mersey Masters or whatever, when Liverpool and Everton had a final or whatever, you know, the Echo used to do all these specials. I had all of them. And so I had all like random memorabilia of like when Rushy was playing, basically. Mm. So I dug out some of that, you know, when he was coming in, got him to sign it, but it was a bit like, you know, see you fucking Rush, man. He's the record goal scorer. Like, you know, I loved, who didn't love Rushy, who grew up in my area? He was unbelievable. And, you know, I mentioned before the 86 Cup final. Well, I was 10 then. And that was massive to me, that, you know, to beat Everton in the final when Everton were good, Liverpool were good. You know, it was all the talk of Merseyside. There was banners everywhere. There was foil FA Cups. There was the joint team picture from the Prudential in everyone's window and all that kind of stuff. It was a massive, massive deal. And Ian Rush boxed us off, and I'm eternally grateful to him for doing so. So, yeah, meeting him was fantastic, and meeting him was very much took me back to the school days, to the little kid wanting to go to game. Barnsley as well, you know, met Barnsley at the Florry for an event there, and able to speak that time. Yeah, I was able to mention what my name was and things like that, but I was still getting a little flutter from, it's John Barnes, yeah. John Barnes. So probably those two still made me feel quite kid-like.
So the other question is the one that I ask everyone, which is there a game, and you can interpret this question whichever way you want, a game which you feel sort of best summarises your relationship with Liverpool Football Club?
It's a big one, that, isn't it? I mean, I was going to go 5-0 this season at Old Trafford because that was unbelievable, and I've got a nice. Nice frame for that ticket, and it sits proudly in my living room now. I was very glad to have been at that game. It's probably loads of people's answers, and it's almost cliche like, but you know, it's probably Istanbul, isn't it? Mm. Because you know, I got out there, I got a ticket, I went with all my mates, and we all know what happened.
Yeah.
And you know, everyone who went has got their own story about the madness of the day and the ground and getting there, and you know, the events on the day when there was loads of people on the stage and the fella was getting all panicky, and you know, all of that basically. And you know, I've got my own little additional ones of nearly ending up scrapping with some fella behind me, and one of my mates reminding me that if you're going to go to jail anywhere, Turkey's probably not the one. But yeah, he kept telling me to get down off my seat when everyone was on the seats, and I'm like, well, why don't you just get up? And you know, we went from there, but by the end, me and everyone else were just in this huge human ball rolling around the Ataturk when we'd won it. And it, you know, it was just unbelievable. It was proper, like, you know, tears in your eyes, like hugging anyone and everyone. Won the fucking European Cup, and we've won it in that manner against this team, having been 3-0 down. Like, it's proper fairy tale stuff. And like, where it was and how far it was and what graft it was to get there just made it feel even better. Mm. Do you know what I mean? It just felt like we'd gone to the moon and we were getting tonked on the moon, and then all of a sudden we sorted it out and we were able to fly back from the moon as the winners. And we were on the day trip as well, so that came with its problems. But the advantage to it was that when we eventually got out of Istanbul, which took a while, we were able to get back and be back in time for the parade as well.
Mm.
So very tired me witnessed the parade, but very tired me was very glad to witness the parade. It was brilliant to be in the city that night and see so many people on the streets and all the rest of it. And yeah, fantastic. And you know, funny as well, because, you know, you talk about what does football mean and all the rest of it and how it marks your life all the way through and relationships with people and all that. And I know everyone buzzes off how I am about Everton, but I've had at least two good Evertonian mates. And one of them I used to sit next to when we were working on those sport pages for the Echo Weeklies. He's still kicking about over there, Terry Owen. He won't be listening. But he's a good lad, Terry, and we always got on. But we would both go near the edge when it come to discussing our teams, and we would piss each other off at different times, and a few times, you know, there were crosswords, to say the least, and things like that. But it always come back. Like I said, I'm still his mate now. And I always remember, and I was surprised, but also made up, that when I got back, and I think it was on the train going into town for that parade, he rang me and said, I'm made up for you, you know. And I was like, okay, now? And he said, no, seriously. And he said, you know, I watched it, obviously. And he's like, I knew you were going to come back. I knew something was going to happen. I knew it would end up that way, you bastard. But then he was like, but I'm made up for you. He was like, I know how much it means to you. And you've gone all that way. You spent all that money. Enjoy yourself, mate, type of thing. And I was like, it's fast, that, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's right, Terry.
Gareth is somebody that I have a huge amount of respect for, who I think has worked incredibly hard to get himself to the position that he's in today. I don't know whether you could tell, but I always felt there was a sense of melancholia as I was talking to him about various aspects of his football supporting life. And I wonder now, on reflection, whether his decision to leave the company was weighing heavily on his mind as we were having our conversation. There did seem to be a sense of hope, though, that maybe his kids are starting to get into football a little bit more, and that will revitalise his own passion for the game. I wish him the very best of luck in whatever it is that he goes on to do, and I'm really looking forward to the times that he comes back into the Anfield Wrap to let us know what he's up to, and also to give us his footballing opinions, which I always think are absolutely worth listening to. I can't thank him enough for giving up his time to talk to me. And my thanks also goes to Andy Heaton for producing. You've been listening to the Anfield Wrap. My name's Adam Smith, and that was What Football Means to Me.